feel very warm and happy inside? Yes? That Baba wants to come and meet us too. In the last several Muralis, the Avyakta Revision Course Muralis, as well as in the new Avyakta Muralis, Baba's been using this expression, following in the footsteps of the Father. And sometimes we think of the Father as the one above, which is true. Baba clarified that today. But also very much, Brahma Baba is our Father. And this is why we are Brahma Kumaras and Kumaris, the children of Brahma Baba. In a way, the whole world are the children of Brahma Baba, but they don't know it. And for us, it's a very personal relationship with Brahma Baba. Let me ask you a question. Who feels that they have a personal relationship with Brahma Baba? Okay, many do. And for those who don't, I would recommend something. I would recommend that you go and sit in front of Brahma Baba's picture here, or Pandav Bhavan, and just take drishti from Baba. And exactly what Baba was saying today, that Shiv Baba is not only teaching us through Brahma Baba, but Shiv Baba is actually able to give us everything through Brahma Baba. And when Baba's been talking about following in the footsteps of the Father, the Avyakta Muralis have made it very, very clear that Baba's talking about following in the footsteps of Brahma Baba. And I remember a message that had come in 1969 in January. As you all know, 18th January 1969, Baba became Avyakt. 21st January 1969, Shiv Baba came and spoke through Dadi Gulzar. And we had not known such a thing was going to happen. And Baba actually told us, today Shiv Baba has come alone. If Baba had brought Brahma Baba with him, you would not have been willing to let him go, which was true. But between the 21st of January, for the next 13 days, every day there was either a very, very detailed bhog message, or it was actually Baba coming through Dadi Gulzar to meet us. And obviously it was a very sensitive time, and so everybody needed that extra help. I had arrived in Abu on the 20th of January, because 18th January I was in Agra, 19th January we left Agra to come to Abu, 20th January we arrived, and then there was tapasya, and then on the 21st evening with the ceremonies and then the bhog offering. And then a couple of days later we were told that we had to go back to our centers quite quickly, because we now understood what was happening, but all our students didn't know, and so we should go back and sustain them. But Baba asked the dadis to stay behind, and obviously many new systems had to be created, and it was Baba directly creating those systems also. So nothing was happening just by human awareness. Everything was happening by Baba's guidance, literally every step along the way. Dadi Gulzar had arrived in Abu 19th morning, and so from then on, Dadi Gulkumarka, who was here with Baba, was asking everything step by step by step. And in one of the bhog messages within that period of 13 days, And those messages and Baba's words are written up, and so somewhere in a library you'll be able to find the pack of all those messages and the information that Baba shared. And it's very, very powerful and valuable. But one particular message I'm remembering is that Dadi Gulzar said how she saw this wheel that was spinning very, very, very slowly. And there was one soul that was out of the wheel, and that was Shiv Baba. It was the wheel of life, the drama, the cycle of birth and rebirth, and all the human souls that are within that, continuing to be within that, no one leaving the cycle at any point. Once they were here, they stayed. But at that moment, when Brahma Baba has become avyakt, Baba left the physical body, and that soul did not go back again into the cycle of birth and death. But that soul temporarily came out of the cycle into the subtle region, because the cycle is in the physical region. And that soul came out of the corporeal dimension and into the subtle region and was there with Shiv Baba. And so throughout the cycle, the only soul who has been able to come out of the cycle before the completion of Kali Yuga is the soul of Brahma Baba. Even Mama, when Mama became avyakt, 24th June 1965, they thought that Mama was avyakt and was somewhere up there, but they didn't ask Baba and Baba didn't tell them until March 1968. And at that point, I wasn't yet properly in Gyan. But of course, my grandmother, my mother, all were connected, and so, and I'd met Baba, Mama many times through my teenage years. And so, my family were the Brahma Kumaris, even more than anyone else. And so, I was actually in India, March 68, and something else significant had happened then. And that was the Dada Vishwakishore. And the daddies all called him Bhau, elder brother. And he was, in worldly terms, Brahma Baba's nephew. But the interesting thing was that Brahma Baba a jeweler, and his nephew, Dada Vishwaratan, also a jeweler. And when Baba surrendered, Vishwakishore Dada wanted to surrender too, but Baba said, no, wait. And then after some months, Baba gave a signal, yes, it's time. So he surrendered, and his wife also surrendered, and she was a trance messenger, that is Santri. So close connections, but apart from that connection, really one who followed in the father's footsteps very, very powerfully in many, many ways. And Dada Vishwakishore left the body March 68, and he was the one who was responsible for the administration of the yagya. Instructions from Shiv Baba, Brahma Baba, but the one who went to meet the officials, etc., 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 all of that was Dada Vishwakishore. And for example, when they moved from Karachi to India, and by then it was already 1950, and so it was a few years after partition. The people who left as refugees left, including my own parents and grandparents. But people who were leaving afterwards, you can imagine that there was a lot of bureaucracy. But it was Dada Vishwakishore who organized all of that, including the fact of all their goods being transferred on the ship to India. which again was a big deal because my parents left empty-handed, as did most others. So their bus came, their marble table. Even today, that marble table still lives in Pandav Bhavan, where the laundry used to be. So imagine this big marble table came all the way from Karachi. But it meant that everything of the yajna could be transferred. And so it just gives you an idea of the capacity of this individual in terms of dealing with bureaucrats and officials and being so yog-yukt that he knew how to get things done. So now he's gone. And a lot of the administrative responsibility burden until Jagdish Pai, Ramesh Pai, others came to take it up, and three people were needed to look after one person's job. Jagdish Pai, Ramesh Pai, and also Nirbhay Pai took on responsibilities a bit later, but at that time it was Vishwaratan. And so one person's job was then taken on by three. But of course, still, Baba had to carry more responsibility than he was earlier. And when Dada Vishwa Kishore left, that was in Bombay, he was having an operation, and he had prepared everything to hand over so that nothing would remain a question. He knew. Everybody thought it was going to be perfectly simple, but he prepared everything so that there were no struggles later. And he leaves, and they get a message through Shilendra Dadi, who's also a trans messenger, that Baba wants to meet the senior Dadis. And many of the Dadis were around in Bombay in those days, including Dadi Kumarka herself. Dadi Janki had come from Pune. So the main Dadis all met together, and the message that has been given to them is that Baba's revealing new information, and that is that Mama has also taken a body. And that had been already when Mama had left 3 years earlier. And if Baba had told them at that time that Mama has taken another birth, they would have all been shocked. And also, probably, they would have started to investigate, where is this child? We want to go find this child. Their attachment was so strong that they wanted to run off. And so Baba's absolute wisdom meant that Baba did not reveal that until 3 years later. And my point in telling you all this detailed story, because today anyway, I don't want to give you straight gyan and tell you, like you had in the points that came in January, yes, Baba was obedient, Baba was loyal, Baba was faithful, you know all that. But I just wanted to share with you some very personal stories of Baba and the yajna in terms of following the father. And so at that moment, they now know that Mama has taken another body, Dada Vishwa Kishore has taken another body. And that's the time when Baba first uses the expression advance party. These are the powerful yogi souls who've gone ahead to prepare for the transition from the Iron Age through the Confluence Age through the upheaval to the Golden Age. Now, more secrets will be revealed as time goes on, but definitely that was one of the things that Baba said. These are the souls of the advanced party. Until then, we'd never heard this expression. And so, every soul, including Mama and Dada, everybody's still part of the cycle of birth and rebirth. And of course, by now we are used to this idea. And so then when Didi Manmohini leaves or when Dadi Prakashmani leaves, we know there's going to be a rebirth. So now it's not a shock anymore. We're accustomed to thinking about that. But when, you can imagine when it was Mama, it would have been a big shock for them at that time. So Baba's very clever and helps us understand things gradually. And then at that time, here's Baba's message, that the only soul who leaves the circle of birth and rebirth is Brahma Baba, and he has stepped out of the cycle for a short period of time to be in the subtle region, and the next birth will be after he's journeyed home, and then it will be the birth in the golden age. And so in terms of Bap Saman, equal to the Father, the one soul who really, really, truly is absolutely equal to the Father is the soul of Brahma Baba. But that makes life very easy for us, or easier for us, in the sense that if you think about trying to become equal to God, how can you do it? You can't even think about it. But you hear the story, and some of us see this man who becomes equal to the Father. And if you don't see Brahma Baba, that's also fine, because you see many others, the dadis, were following in the footsteps of the Father, and you are seeing a glimpse of what the Father would have been like. And so you're beginning to see how me as a human being can actually move ahead beyond human limitations and weaknesses and become like this Father, Brahma Baba, and then very close to the Father, Shiv Baba also. And so Brahma Baba becomes the image, the model, the role model, whom we can see and follow. And yes, he is a human being. And yet you've heard the story of how, through the power of faith, he was able to believe in that one and trust the guidance of that one. They have an image in bhakti, and that is that you've heard the story of bhakti tells us that God came into the chariot of Arjuna, and Arjuna handed over the reins of the horses to God, and the word Krishna is used, but the understanding I have of the word Krishna in that context is Akarshan Karnivala, the one with the power of attraction for all souls. So it's not talking about this prince of the golden age who only people in Bharat know about. This is talking about incorporeal God. And of course the horses, the mind with that horsepower racing, but also the intellect, the reins on the horse. And so Brahma Baba hands over the reins of the horses, his intellect, to God. And from then on is following God's instructions every step of the way. A very simple definition of faith that I read somewhere a long time ago was that you believe in that which is not visible. And so to believe in what I can see, it's not a problem. But to believe in the things that I cannot see, but I can only begin to understand and have a glimpse through the inner eye, the eye of wisdom, now that is what faith really means. And so today we have this huge university, and we can see that something powerful is happening. Today we have 900,000 Brahmins, and we see that, yes, so many have transformed their lives. Think back to Brahma Baba. Who did he have in front of him? Absolutely, absolutely no one at all. And so really the pioneer, the leader, moving ahead. And not only do they describe in bhakti this image of Arjuna handing over the reins of his horses to God, but there's another very lovely image that they have within this whole thing of horse and chariot. They say that Arjuna's chariot and Arjuna's horses were so very special that the horses could fly up above in the sky, and the chariot was so powerful that even the trees didn't get in the way, the mountains didn't get in the way. Somehow the chariot was able to cross all of this, and the chariot was able to keep going. What does that tell you? There's no physical chariot that can just suddenly go through a mountain. There's no physical chariot that's going to scrape the tops of the trees and go beyond. But it's talking about the vehicle of the mind. The mind is not only the horses, but also Baba uses this expression, the vehicle of the mind. And so Arjuna's chariot was the chariot of the mind. And they say that the flagpole that Arjuna had was so long and tall that it was like miles and miles and miles high. Now, one is to have the chariot flying across the mountains, but just imagine if you've got this flagpole and it's flying, it's going to get stuck somewhere. But it never got stuck anywhere. And so it's actually symbolic, obviously. The flag of a nation, it carries some sort of symbol, which are the aims of that nation. And so the flag of India, for example, the spinning wheel and the three lions, and the slogan that says, in truth there is victory. That's the slogan. And so the symbol, the spinning wheel, self-reliance and independence for India, it was a symbol. Otherwise, cotton was grown in India. It was sent across to Manchester and Leeds, and it was made into cotton there. The price was multiplied 10 times, and it was sent back to India. Crazy. But that's how it worked at that point. So the whole idea of self-reliance and independence, and Gandhi sitting with his spinning wheel every day for a little while. So one of the aims, that's the point. And so the three lions, the Trinity. And the aim of Brahma Baba, Arjuna, absolutely high, absolutely the highest, to become a devta, to become a deity. Until that point, that Brahma Baba had the vision of Vishnu, people thought that Vishnu was God. They talk about Vishnu Bhagwan in Bhakti. And Brahma Baba himself was a devotee of Narayan. But now suddenly he's seeing this image of Vishnu in his visions, and he's hearing the word Tattvam Asmi, you are this, you are he. Now, doesn't make sense, you know, this is the God I've been worshipping. And so all of these new things were coming into his mind, and he knew it wasn't from his gurus, he knew it was from God, because the gurus weren't able to explain. And then he began to understand that it was coming to him from up above. And somehow he was able then to have this faith that it is the one above. Nothing visible, just something going on in his head. This high, high aim to become divine. And they say that on the flag of Arjuna's chariot, the actual flag itself, there was a crescent moon. And there was also many, many stars. There was actually a full moon, sorry, not a crescent moon, a full moon, and many, many stars. And so the full moon, the symbol of 16 celestial degrees complete, and the stars, the unity of the human family. And so Baba's often given that example of just as the stars of the sky are together, how come the stars of the earth are not able to be together in unity? And so Brahma Baba, the faith that he had, the courage that he had, the power that he had, and the ability to follow that which is invisible and unseen. Now, That is the model in front of us. And we can see how Brahma Baba, with the number one faith, achieving the number one stage. And so today, even though I have lots of proofs in that sense on an external level, that yes, this isn't human work that's going on, it must be something from above. Yet still, to have faith in the knowledge, to have faith in Shiv Baba, to have faith in the family. Now, Brahma Baba is the model. Let me be able to have the same faith that allowed Brahma Baba to be the pioneer, and with nothing visible. Today's Murali, Baba's talking about thousands of centers opening. And in front of Baba in the 60s, and I witnessed this, I would come in August in the monsoon seasons in 1966, 67, 68. And at that time, it was like 30 old women in front of Baba and four, five brothers. The four, five brothers, Dada Anand Kishore, Dada Vishwa Kishore, Dada Vishwa Ratan, Anand Kishore Dada was out on service, Dada Chandras, Jamuna Prasad Bhai, that's it. I can mention about four or five. And all the rest were the sisters who didn't go out on service to other places, and most of them were old because they didn't have the physical capacity to be running around doing service. And a few younger ones who were running the accommodation department, the kitchen department, and so on and so on. And so here's Baba talking to this group of women and a handful of brothers. And Baba's talking about expansion of thousands of centers. Now, yes, it's Shiv Baba speaking, and Baba knows everything, but also Brahma Baba's faith that yes, Shiv Baba is saying, and I can't see anything yet, and yet it's going to happen. Or today Baba speaking about Christianity, and in front of Baba, how many Christians were there? Zero. There was not a single Christian sitting in front of Baba. It was all people from a Hindu or Sikh background. A few Muslims had come into Gyan by the end of the 60s, but that's it. And yet Baba's talking about all the religions of the world. And so, Brahma Baba, able to understand and accept with total faith and commitment what Shiv Baba is saying. And so today I ask myself the question. I've seen many wonders of Baba, both in terms of my own transformation, things that I know I wouldn't have been able to achieve. I've seen many things in terms of service, and I know that it was not human energy that made all that happen. And yet, is the quality of my faith the same as the quality of Brahma Baba's faith? And so following in the footsteps of the Father, the very first aspect, the question of faith. The second aspect of following the footsteps of the Father, Baba's love for the Father, and yes, for the family also. We have a photograph in London that somebody gave Daddy, and it's the days of Abu, so it would have been 51, 52. And it's Baba wearing shorts and carrying a stick and walking on the mountains. You've all seen the photograph in Dadiji's cottage here in Gyansrover, in which you see the sisters all wearing shorts. Now, think about the 1930s on the subcontinent, and especially in the area of Sindh, which had a majority of Muslims, and even today, 21st century, women in Karachi are covered from head to toe, not necessarily the black veil, but salwar kameez. You don't show your legs, you don't show your arms, you don't. It's not the culture. And my goodness, here was Brahma Baba and Shiv Baba training the Shakti army. And in the 30s, Baba had them in shorts. I mean, Baba the visionary and the revolutionary and the pioneer, quite incredible. But Baba was training them. It was time for drill. They were the military. They were not just girls. They were not just women. They were the army that was going to bring about the revolution and bring the new world. This is the vision that Baba had of them. And so shorts were not new in the yagya. And so 1951-52, and Baba's in shorts. But why I'm talking about this particular picture, when Daddy first saw this picture, she was moved to tears. Because Baba's legs are as skinny as the stick he's carrying. Absolutely two spindly legs, and then the stick. And they all look the same, practically. And the point is that there was no food in the yagya. There was such a time of poverty that Baba sent them off into the mountains to have the berries on the trees for breakfast, and a little bit would come in, and then Baba would make sure that all the children were fed first. Baba never had his meals before 2:30, and if you look at the dadis today, they have the same practice. At least when Dadi Kumarka was around, Dadi Janki was a little bit more disciplined with her meals, and she had lunch at 2 o'clock. It became 2:30 sometimes. But basically, after everybody had eaten. And that started with Baba. Baba would want all the children to eat, and then Baba would eat. And there was practically nothing there. And so you see Baba's skinny legs. And so through that whole period, which lasted for a little while, until then service began, and then through service souls began to contribute, and so on and so on. But through that period, Baba's faith and Baba's love for God and the children kept the yagya going, because they would look at Baba's face, and Baba would be intoxicated with gyan, and they would forget about things like food and medicine. They would just be intoxicated because Baba was so intoxicated. You know where today in the Murali Baba said, the way to claim self-sovereignty, and to me it means self-sovereignty today, the master of the senses and my inner faculties, and then, yes, the self-sovereignty of the golden age. But the way Baba described it, when you're ready to sacrifice everything into the sacrificial fire. And when you sacrifice something into the sacrificial fire, it is purified. And so the purpose of sacrificing this into the sacrificial fire, so that it's no longer mine, but it's Baba's, and I do what Baba wants me to do. Then from that moment on, the process of purification happens. And so Brahma Baba's sacrifice even of this into the fire, so that the yagya could stay alive. And then of course there came a point where the yagya would flourish. But during that period where, again, what is it that they held on to? All the dadis held on to Baba. But what is it that Baba held on to? Baba held on to his faith in one. That it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And if anybody would want to leave, Baba would say the door's open. But those who had the faith in Baba and the faith in that one, they stayed, and they're the ones we call the dadis today. One story I witnessed. Baba's room was very little. Today Baba's room's been expanded greatly. But just to where that seat where the sister sits, there's only one chair for sisters. The settee is at the back for the sofa for the brothers. But that one seat, that's where there was a wall. and a little doorway into an area which was a stockroom, and in particular the fruit room at that time. And one day, and we used to go in and out of Baba's room very freely. Baba wouldn't say, "Why have you come? Just come." So gone into Baba's room, and we used to go in not through the door that we use today, but we used to go in through the inside of that old building, and most of us would use that door. So we went in from there, and Baba was in that fruit room. And what Baba was doing was picking out the best fruits. And Baba's face was so full of love. Out of the fruits that were there, Baba was choosing the best of the bunch. And why Baba was doing that was because Baba wanted those fruits to be offered to Shiv Baba for bhog. And it's like if a wife loves her husband very dearly, what she will do is to find the best to offer to her husband. And so Baba, the bride, offering to the supreme bridegroom and finding that which is the best for Baba. But on the one side, Baba's love for Shiv Baba, and on the other side, Baba's love for the children. And some of you have heard this story before, but I don't mind repeating it. 1959, and we'd moved to London a few years earlier, and suddenly we get through the post a parcel, and my brother and I are very excited, and the postman rings the bell, it can't come through the letterbox, and so we get this parcel, and my mom signals, "Yes, open it." And we open this parcel, and guess what it's got? It's got 6 Alfonso mangoes. Now, 1959, nobody thinks of sending fruits and veggies across the oceans by airplane. But Baba has sent this airmail parcel of 6 mangoes for these children, who Baba is remembering, and he is saying that Baba's in Bombay and he's enjoying a mango. And he says, "Those children there, they don't have mangoes there. Send the children these mangoes." Now, we had lots of Lokik family in India, but they didn't think about sending mangoes by aeroplane. Now, who would think about that? Only Baba. The one with a big, big heart, a generous heart. So, am I following in the Father's footsteps? Is my heart as big and generous as Baba's heart? Another story about generosity, but this is much later. This is around 1966, 67, around that time. And winters were very, very harsh. Nowadays, the climate's become very changeable. January was mild, and February is 2 degrees. December was very cold, actually. But January was mild. So everything's a bit topsy-turvy now. But at that point, it's winter time, and one of the sisters who's in the school, Sophia College in Abu Village. It still exists, and it's run by the nuns. And one of the sisters who was studying there, she was just 16, 17, and her mother had her mother lived abroad, and her mother had put her in that boarding school, especially in Mount Abu, so that she would have an opportunity to come to Madhuban to see the daughter, but also to see Baba. And Baba was actually legally this girl's guardian. Now, amazing fortune, you know. How many of us have a relationship with Baba in which, on a legal level, in terms of the world, Baba is our legal guardian. But Baba was her legal guardian while she was here in India. And this girl comes to Madhuban every Sunday, And Dada Vishwaratan used to go to the school, bring the girl to Pandu Bhavan, and then she'd spend the day with Baba and then go back to school. And meanwhile, Baba would load her up with fruits and tolis, and basically she survived on those fruits and tolis for the rest of the week, because all they gave her in terms of vegetarian diet was boiled potatoes. It was a convent school, so they didn't know what else to feed her. They didn't know about other things. So she survived on the fruits and tolis from Baba. So she's come to see Baba one Sunday, and she says, "Baba, I have a question for you. Tell me, child." And she tells Baba that the Mother Superior has asked her to ask Baba whether they have coal and where they're able to buy coal, because the nuns are not able to buy any coal anymore. There's none available in the town. And so Baba tells her, asks her, "But there's no coal available?" And she says, "No, Baba." And so Baba says to her, "But how are all of you bathing? It's winter." There was no heating system, but at least Abu had hot water. We had one hot water tap in the whole of Pandav Bhavan. And that's where, you know, they now have, they're on your way to the staircase, the main staircase to the dining room in Pandav Bhavan, just down below at the bottom, in front of the kitchen. There was one hot water tap in the whole of Pandav Bhavan, so we used to fill our buckets and carry them to our rooms, or the brothers would do it for us. And she said, "Baba, there's no hot water." So Baba's saying, "How are the girls bathing with cold water?" And she goes like this. And Baba says, "Tell the nuns to send across a bullock cart, and Baba will send the coal." And the nun, one of the nuns come with the bullock cart, and Baba gets it loaded up with coal. Imagine, big bullock cart. And it gets loaded up with coal, and the nun is asking Baba, "Baba, what's the cost of all this? It's very expensive." And Baba says to the nun, "Baba's not going to discuss money with her. It's okay, don't worry." And so anyway, the bullock cart goes off. And the nun still then tells this girl, "Ask Baba what the cost is." And Baba then explains to the girl, "Tell the nuns that the girls are Baba's children. Just as the sisters here in the ashram are Baba's children, the girls in the school are also Baba's children. And so the father doesn't take anything from his children." And so this was a gift from Baba to the nuns, and they couldn't quite believe it. But this is what Baba did. Again, Baba's unlimited awareness of the whole world as my children. And so not just a theoretical, abstract thought, but in very practical terms, Baba demonstrating it in that way for all the children. And so again, Baba, unlimited, generous, big-hearted. Somebody asked Daddy the question. They had brought two cardigans for Daddy to give to the brothers. And they'd seen two brothers on night duty in Global House. And so winter time and in the night it's cold. And so they brought these two thick things for the brothers. And so Daddy liked them, and Daddy gave them to these brothers. And Daddy asked this brother who had brought them, "How much do they cost?" And he says, Daddy, don't worry." And Daddy says, "No, it's for a good reason." So Daddy, he tells Daddy. And Daddy says, "Okay, go back to the shop and say, if instead of two cardigans for this amount, what if we were to buy 30 cardigans?" Daddy's a businessman. And so ask him what the discount would be if we buy in bulk, if we get 30. Because I'm not just thinking about the brothers here, I'm thinking about the brothers in India also. And it'd be nice to send them these thick cardigans because it gets cold there. And he goes off and he just gets them and he brings them to Daddy. And Daddy's asking him about costs and things. Daddy, don't worry, it's fine. And he then thanks Daddy for teaching him to have a generous heart. And he then asks Daddy the question, Daddy, what does it take to have a generous heart? And Daddy's answer is very interesting. Daddy's answer is cleanliness. First you have to clean out your heart, and when your heart is clean, then your heart can be big and generous also. And so, Brahma Baba, Baba's heart, absolutely clean, nothing for the self. In terms of even Baba's lokic life, you've heard or read the stories about Baba looking after the young person who was working for him and had stolen something. And Baba knew he'd stolen a diamond. But Baba didn't want to get angry with him or tell him off. Baba sat him down and spoke to him and talked to him and asked, what's the problem? Do you have a problem? Do you need money? And he tells Baba, yes, there's a problem. My mother's very sick and I don't have money to look after her. And Baba says, child, why didn't you come to Baba? Baba would have given you whatever you needed. And so Baba gives him whatever is needed. And then, of course, the boy owns up and says, but Baba, this is what I'd taken. And so even before Shiv Baba has entered Brahma Baba, Baba's heart so generous and so loving, and the concern that there should be no harshness in my dealings, but Baba made the person realize, but also made the person become honest through that love. But Baba's heart completely clean, no bad feelings, no negative feelings for anyone, for any reason at all. And so Shiv Baba chose absolutely the right instrument, which of course Shiv Baba would. And of course, according to drama, it's the same instrument as the last kalpa. And so Brahma Baba, when he became Brahma Baba, instantly able to have a very, very big and open, generous heart by then, not just for two or three. Can you imagine looking after 300 people for 14 years? Now that was the generosity of Brahma Baba. Would we be able to look after ourselves for 14 years? Would we be able to look after four people for 14 years? And Brahma Baba looked after 300 people for 14 years. And then of course, when it was the time of the beggary part, Brahma Baba thinking about it very, very deeply. Why has this scene come? What is the purpose of this scene? And Baba then started the system of officially offering bhog. Until then, in the early days, when Baba would come in a trance messenger and that was happening, Baba would have 36 varieties of food prepared. Baba would have a new set of clothes prepared for the trance messenger, a new set of clothes every time that Baba was coming. For this was Baba's love and devotion and generosity. But when that part finished, which it did fairly early on, then it was no more Shiv Baba coming through the trance messenger. It was then Shiv Baba just giving messages through the trance messengers. But that system of officially offering bhog stopped. And of course, in everyone's minds, it was that God is feeding us. And so it was not a human being feeding us, it was God feeding us, so it was fine. But when this role of the beggary part began, the poverty period, Baba thinking, why is this happening? Why is this happening? And Baba understanding. And then saying, what we have to do is offer bhog. And from then on, the system of offering bhog, and absolutely, again, perfect, accurate drama, because that was also the time when money from outside started coming into the yagya from different people, from different places where people were being served. And so if I have the thought, I'm giving to the yagya or I'm giving to you, then it becomes a personal thing. And of course, if I think I'm giving to you, you're in the center, and I bring a bag of apples and I say, this is for you, then, and you think it's for me, it becomes a karmic account between the two of us. But if I know I'm bringing to Baba's house for Baba to offer to Bhog, and you know you're being fed by Bhog from Baba's home, I carry no karmic bondage with you, but rather I create fortune with God, and you create no karma with me, but you are being fed by God, and so your fortune also. And so the perfect timing of drama. First it was Brahma Baba's wealth that sustained everyone, and then when other money started coming in, then it was Bhog offering. And so on all levels, Baba always, always deeply, deeply thinking about karma philosophy and understanding what was the need for the next step and what had to happen. But absolute love, absolute faith, absolute dedication. And so, following in the footsteps of the Father, one last story. And it was a story that got mentioned in the 18 steps of the Father that came to us this year from Madhavan, which were very beautiful little stories, snippets. But literally in the 50s again. And at that time, nothing very much in the yagya. And Baba becoming sick, and Baba going to Bombay, and the people in Abu at that time thinking, maybe we're not going to see Baba again. And Baba by then was around 70 years old, which is also interesting. But Baba at that time, having the operation, and then help comes and everything works out and it's fine. But at that time, Baba isn't able to speak the Murli to anyone, not even 10 or 20. And Daddy Janki is there. Baba calls in Daddy Janki. And Baba shares his thoughts with her. And she's looking after Baba in the hospital in Bombay. And she then Baba tells her, okay, write this down and send it off to everyone so that everybody gets the Murli, which is what she does. You've seen how her memory for Gyan is photographic memory. She'll be able to quote you chapter and verse of Murlis. Let me finish the story. Okay, let's have a moment and then I'll finish the story. So Daddy writing the Murli, 18 pages, and it gets sent everywhere. So the children are able to receive the Murli. So when Baba commented the other day, the value that Bap Dada have for the Murli, children sometimes don't have the same value. But Brahma Baba's attention on the Murli and attention to what Shiv Baba is saying. And so if I follow in the footsteps of the Father and have the same attention to Baba's Murli, I can become like the Father too. Om Shakti. Enjoy your meeting with Baba tonight.